ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुवे कृष्णसागरे नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे नरकशेषन्यवारी श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनचनंद श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर शिवस्ति गौरवाक्षवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 25, Verse 23. Madarpanam nishpulam va satyakam nijikarma tat ajasam phala sankalpam hinsa prayadi tamasam Madarpanam nishpalam va Satvikam nija karma tat Rajasam phala sankalpam Hingsa prayati tamasam Madarpanam nishpalam va Satvikam nija karma tat Rajasam phala sankalpam Hingsa prayadi tamasam Madarpanam offered unto me Nishvalam done without expectation of result Va and Satvikam in the mode of goodness Nija accepted as one's prescribed duty. Karma, work, tat, that, rajasam, in the mode of passion, phalasankalpam, done in expectation of some result. Hingsa prayadi, done with violence, envy, and so on. Tamasam, in the mode of ignorance. Translation, work performed as an offering to me without consideration of the fruit is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Work performed with a desire to enjoy the results is in the mode of passion. And work impelled by violence and envy is in the mode of ignorance. Prabhupada, ordinary work performed as an offering to God without desire for a result is understood to be in the mode of goodness, whereas activities of devotion such as chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord are transcendental forms of work beyond the modes of nature. Text 24. Absolute knowledge, that is Kaivalya, is in the mode of goodness. Knowledge based on duality is in the mode of passion, and foolish materialistic knowledge is in the mode of ignorance. Knowledge based on me, however, is transcendental, considered understood to be transcendental. Purport, the Lord clearly explains here that spiritual knowledge of His Supreme Personality is transcendental to ordinary religious knowledge in the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one understands the existence of higher spiritual nature within all things. In the mode of passion, one acquires scientific knowledge of the material body. And in the mode of ignorance, one fixes one's mind on the sense object without higher awareness, perceiving things as a small child or retarded person does. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborately explains in his commentary on this verse that the material mode of goodness does not award perfect knowledge of the absolute truth. He quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, proving that many great demigods in the mode of goodness could not understand the transcendental personality of Lord Krishna. In the material mode of goodness, one becomes pious or religious, aware of a higher spiritual nature. On the spiritual platform of purified goodness, however, one establishes a direct loving relationship with the absolute truth, rendering service to the Lord rather than merely maintaining a connection to mundane piety. In the mode of passion, the conditioned soul speculates about the reality of his own existence and of the world around him and considers speculatively the existence of a kingdom of God. In the mode of ignorance, one acquires knowledge of sense gratification, absorbing the mind in various varieties of eating, sleeping, depending, and sex without any higher purpose. Thus, within the modes of material of nature, the conditioned souls are trying to gratify their senses, or else they are trying to free themselves from sense gratification, but they cannot directly engage themselves in their constitutional liberated activities until they come to the transcendental position of Krishna consciousness beyond the modes of nature. Translation: work performed as an offering to me without consideration of the fruit is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Work performed with a desire to enjoy the results is in the mode of passion, and work compelled by violence and envy is in the mode of ignorance. Absolute knowledge is in the mode of goodness, knowledge based on duality is in the mode of passion, and foolish materialistic knowledge is in the mode of ignorance. Knowledge based on me, however, is understood to be transcendental. So here again we get more items classified according to gunas. So we have work and knowledge, which are very important. Work meaning, of course, activities. And specifically, of course, we can say more specifically, is prescribed duties in karma, yoga, and varnashram, etc. Particularly when we get in the upper modes of nature. So here we see, madarpanam nishvalam va satvikam nija karma tat, to do activities as an offering to the Lord, and with no or and with no desire for results, that is nishkama karma, or nishkama karma with karma arpanam, dedicated to the Lord. This is called satvika. We may think, oh, it's offered to the Lord, so it's transcendental. But no, it's not. It's in the mode of sattva-gun. So this why is because the main activity is still prescribed duties within the varnashram system. And one has attachment to doing these duties. And one also offers them to the Lord. So the somewhat, we can say, is devotional. It's related to the Lord, and therefore, yes, it's recognizing the Lord. So that's good. But we don't label this directly as bhakti. At best, it is secondary bhakti. So actually, Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha gives some classification of different types of activities like that. They are considered to be, let's say, slight bhakti of sorts. But we see the result is different. So for us, the main bhakti is direct activities like hearing about the Lord, chanting the Lord's name, etc. This is the main activities, doing your prescribed duties. Afterwards, we offer to the Lord. So it is very, very secondary as far as bhakti is concerned. Whereas when we make it a major activity, our intention is to please the Lord. So here, the intentions are something else. So, of course, this is better than doing activities with desire to enjoy the results for oneself. So it is superior to sakama karma. This nishkama karma is higher than sakama karma. So generally we can class karma yoga as a rajasic type of thing, because generally you want to enjoy the material world as a result of our activities. So that's sakama karma. But a next higher step would be nishkama karma, or nishvalam in this case. Without the desire for the results. So it's a little higher. So we're getting up into the sattvic category when we go there. And then we, further step, we can offer that to the Lord. I don't want it for myself. So I'm doing it because it's my duty. And the Lord says do it, so I do it, so I offer to the Lord. This doesn't mean there's complete detachment, obviously. One still has a desire and attachment for sattva-gun. And that existence in sattva-gun. So what is the result of such work? Kapiladev describes in the third canto that the people that do this type of work go to Brahmaloka, ultimately. They can go to Brahmaloka. So in other words, they remain within the material world. So even if we do nishkama karma yoga and offer to the Lord, that is not, we don't get the same result as when we do bhakti. We remain in the material world. Now, if we do mixed bhakti, even that is better than this. Because, as I said, you can actually, the Lord will actually take you to spiritual world, even though your rasa is very, very minimal. You still go to the spiritual world. Here, you remain in the material world with Nishkama Karma Yoga. So therefore, we should understand this system of Karma Yoga is quite limited in what it can do. And we see in the next verse, knowledge, kaivalyam, kaivalyam gyanam, impersonal Brahman knowledge, knowledge I am Atma, that is in the mode of goodness. Not transcendental, mode of goodness. So jnana, which is the, let's say, the final result of doing karma yoga is we get to jnana yoga, and we get moksha. Through the other process of karma yoga, we get artha, dharma, and kama. And then finally, we progress to jnana, and we get moksha, apparently. So, all of this is within the gunas. We see this sattva knowledge of Atman, Kaivalya, merging in Brahman. That knowledge is not even transcendental. This is nigunas. It's sattva. So it actually, in itself, cannot give you liberation, because something in the gunas cannot take you beyond the gunas. So therefore, jnana in itself cannot get you beyond the gunas. What to speak of karma? Karma cannot get you on the gunas either. It can get you up to sattva gun. And jnana can keep you at the top of sattva gun. So then the problem would come, well, how is it that jnana, we say jnana gives liberation, and bhakti gives prema? So the answer to that by Vishwanath Chakravarti is that the only way that jnana can give liberation is if one gets the mercy of bhakti, and bhakti will deliver you and give you that liberation. Of course, you could ask, well, if you do bhakti, why wouldn't you go to the spiritual world? Why? Because the person doesn't want to go there. They want to merge in Brahman. So the Lord gives them that. So what is the bhakti? Obviously, the bhakti is not great bhakti. Just as in karma yoga, where it's arpanam to the Lord, everything is offered to the Lord in Nishkama Karma Yoga. That's also sattva. So similarly, with the jnana, there's a little bit of bhakti there. We don't really call it bhakti because it's recognition of the Lord, but without full dedication to the Lord. So at least the jnani should recognize the Lord and does some worship of the Lord. So we often see in the scriptures that the jnani actually is directed to worship the Lord as part of a sadhana. Of course, it's not the only sadhana, but as part of his sadhana, he also worships the Lord. Just as in Astanga Yoga, they also worship the Lord. Ishwara Pranidhan is one of the things they do. That is one of their niyamas. They worship the Lord. But, of course, it's an anga of the yoga. It's not a major thing. Whereas in bhakti, the angas of bhakti are major things. So these are very minor things they do in yoga and jnana. So later in the Bhagavatam, it will also explain that if you want liberation, you have to reject jnana because it is sattva. You have to reject that process to get liberation. If you hold on to the process of jnana, you'll stay in sattva gun. So you reject the jnana completely. But you do not reject the bhakti, the worship of the Lord. So that sticks to you, and it's that bhakti, that little bit of bhakti which remains, which gives you the liberation by the mercy of the Lord. And as I said yesterday, if you offend the Lord and you don't think the Lord is spiritual and you think he's material, then you cannot get liberation. So that is why Bhagavatam says those who think they are liberated, they are vimukti manina, they think, yes, I'm liberated, but actually they're not. And if they disrespect the Lord's lotus feet, then putanti yada, they fall down. Therefore, the real jnani must be very intelligent. He must also respect the Lord. Even though he doesn't want to attain the Lord, he must respect him. And then he can get liberation. So these verses are actually very clear. They show that the process of jnana is not independent. And the process of karma also is not independent. So, of course, even in the first canto it says that karma yoga and all this, these activities, in themselves, they cannot even get you swarga loka. You must also respect the Lord. If you disrespect the Lord, then even your enjoyment in the material world cannot be attained. That means that all these processes, karma yoga, jnana yoga, sangha yoga, ultimately depend on bhakti. If you want the results. If you want the results of karma yoga, which is material enjoyment, you also have to respect the Lord. So that's why we have the karma and arpana mixed in here. You have to respect the Lord. And then you can go to svarga loka, brahma loka, whatever. If you don't do that, you don't get anything. So there's a dependence upon bhakti, even though it is a little bit of bhakti. And if you want liberation and don't respect the Lord, you don't get liberation. You stay in sattva-guna. Yeah? And the same with yoga. If you don't respect the Lord as Paramatma, then you cannot get liberation also. So in other words, karma, jnana, and astanga yoga are not independent processes to yield their results of enjoyment in the material world or liberation. They are dependent ultimately on bhakti, because the Supreme Lord is the one who's in charge of everything, and he will allow the devatas to give you the material results in different lokas, or he will allow you to get Brahman liberation. And nobody else. Brahman cannot do anything because it's not a person. He has no mercy. Brahman has no mercy to give you. He has no hands, he has no feet, he has no mind, he has no compassion. So he can't do anything. Brahman can do nothing. Krishna must do everything. So he'll be merciful to you and give you your liberation, help you get your liberation. So these other processes are not independent. They are dependent ultimately on bhakti. And if we make the mistake of rejecting bhakti and simply doing them, we will not get the result. We will fail. So that is one point which is very clear here and in other parts of the Bhagavatam. The other point is that bhakti is independent of the other processes. The other processes are not independent and they rely on bhakti for the result. Bhakti is independent of the other processes. It does not rely on karma or jnana or yoga. Or any other process. So that, of course, is also made clear in the nectar devotion, where Rupa Goswami says that the process of bhakti is there, and we have the major angas like hearing and chanting, remembering, and these processes directly give you more devotion, ultimately prema. And other processes, such as vairagya and jnana and varnashram, etc., they are not angas of bhakti, because in doing them it doesn't produce bhakti at all, and in fact sometimes it may do the opposite. So jnana and vairagya tend to dry up the heart and instead of melting the heart. So the whole process of bhakti is to melt the heart and make one more in love with Krishna. And the process of jnana and renunciation, vairagya, they tend to dry up the heart and make one less in love with Krishna. Of course, that means that one becomes more in love with Brahman, I suppose, or more attached to Brahman, and consequently, no affection for Krishna develops. So, the heart becomes hard and dried up by these processes if we concentrate on them. So therefore, it is not advisable to mix these processes with the process of bhakti. And of course, if we mix other things, he says that even cultivation of good qualities is not an anga of bhakti. Of course, we'll say, well, we should have good qualities as devotees. But then we remember that the second quality of bhakti is subhada. And that means that bhakti bestows all good qualities. Now, if we try to develop good qualities, generally what we'll do is we'll try to develop sattvic qualities. So, if we become attached to sattvic qualities, then we're still in the gunas. So, when Krishna says you develop all good qualities, and bhakti develops all good qualities, what type of qualities are we developing? So that must mean we're developing spiritual qualities. In other words, when we worship the Supreme Lord,
the Atma becomes similar to the Lord. So, of course, we develop a spiritual body in the spiritual world because the Lord has spiritual bodies. We know similarity. Similarly, according to the form of the Lord you worship, you develop similar qualities. So if you worship Krishna, you develop similar Madhurya qualities. If you worship Rama, you develop qualities conducive to worshipping Rama. Or if you worship Narasimha, then you develop qualities conducive to that worship. So we tend to develop qualities similar to those of the Lord, which are spiritual qualities. So we see also in Nectar Devotion, there's a list of 64 qualities of Krishna. See, these are not material qualities, they're not sattva-gun qualities. Though we have qualities like intelligence and cleverness and generosity, and well, these are mode of goodness or something. But no, they're not. They're transcendental qualities. So the devotees also, through the process of bhakti, when they develop qualities, ultimately they develop spiritual qualities. In other words, the Atma develops. It's not the mind and all this developing, it's actually the Atma which develops. Why? Because we're developing a relationship with the Lord, so we develop similarity to the Lord. The Atma develops that similarity. And of course we develop form, etc. as well. And secondarily, those qualities become reflected in our body, in our mind, etc. But emanating from the Atma. So therefore, the qualities which develop in the devotee are spiritual qualities. They may look like material qualities because there are similar qualities in the material world. So in the material world, the best qualities are the sattvic qualities. The rajasic and tamasic qualities are not considered very good. So Krishna praises sattva gun in the Bhagavad Gita and say faith in sattva is nice and mind in sattva is nice, etc. So they're much better. So if one develops spiritual qualities, there will be similarity. So they look the same. We should not confuse them. If Krishna is generous, we shouldn't think that is material generosity, sattva, that Krishna is only a sattvic being. No. It is spiritual, actually, because he's fully spiritual. So similarly, when the devotee develops qualities also, those are also spiritual qualities, not material qualities. So they may look like material qualities in the material world, but actually they're not. So therefore, cultivating good qualities, that is, sattvic qualities in the material world, that's not an anga of bhakti, because that will trap you in the material world if we try to develop material sattvic qualities. I want to be good to all people, I want to do this, I want compassion, material compassion. So if we get stuck in those qualities, this becomes an impediment also. So the main item is to develop a loving relationship with Krishna. This is the solution to everything. And through that, we develop all good qualities, which are spiritual qualities, superior to the sattvic qualities. This is the method of bhakti. Bhakti is an independent process, and it does not depend on other processes of karma yoga, gyan yoga, astanga yoga, varnashram, etc. It can be done completely independently. Of course, we can mix the processes, and then we get mixed bhakti. We get karma Mr. Bhakti, or gyan Mr. Bhakti, or yoga Mr. Bhakti, whatever. We can mix it. But then again, as I said, we don't get the same result. We'll get a weak relationship with the Lord in the spiritual world, ultimately. So that is why Rupa Goswami particularly gives a definition at the very beginning. This bhakti, doing this sadhana, that is, Abhilashita Shunya Jnana Karma Javartam, that bhakti will lead to bhava and prema. And the other ones will not lead to that same goal. Of course, we can say shanta is also part of prema, but it's very weak. So, the mixed bhakti also, ultimately, Krishna will be merciful and take you to the spiritual world and give you a weak relationship. But bhakti rasa mrija sindhu actually means the other rasas. They're considered much better. So, if you want, you can be a sage in the spiritual world and be a shanta all the time, but it's not so. That is actually not what Rupa Goswami is encouraging. He's encouraging much more active relationship with the Lord. So therefore, bhakti is independent of the other processes. We should not think it depends on the other processes. Then we may see, for instance, in the Nectar of Instruction, where it says, okay, these things are favorable to bhakti, patience and whatever. tolerance and all these things. So we have some qualities which are favorable or anukulya for bhakti. They help it. So what about that? We should kind of cultivate those qualities. But we should understand that this is never an anga of bhakti. These are favorable items, which we do. So there are many other favorable items also. We take a bath in the morning. We brush our teeth. We put on clean clothing. So this is not bhakti, obviously, because karmis do that also, maybe, if they're lucky, fortunate. And mayavadis would also do the same thing, and gyanis would do the same thing also. And, you know, and Sankites maybe, and Nayakas and other people would do the same thing. Brahmins will do the same thing, and not necessarily Vaishnavas. And then take a bath and be clean and whatever. Nevertheless, the devotees also do these things. So these are favorable items also. We do. But bhakti does not depend on those items. If you happen to have a place where there's no water and you can't take a bath for 20 years, you can still do bhakti, and Krishna's not going to, you know, consider that wrong. So bhakti ultimately doesn't depend on it, but it is favorable because it's good for health and cleanliness and whatever. Keeps the mind clear. So some things are favorable. And so and generally we do them, but the bhakti ultimately does not depend on them. So they're helpful to us. So we do those things. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, there he gives a whole list of things which are, we can say, gona vidhi. The mukhya vidhi are the things like hearing and chanting and remembering, and those things we do, they give us bhakti. Taking a bath and being clean does not give you bhakti. Just keeps you clean, that's all. But it is favorable to the other process of hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. It helps us. So therefore, we call it secondary rule. Not a primary rule, because it doesn't directly give bhakti, but it supports it. So we call it gonavidhi, or secondary rule. So in that sense, we can take the rules of Varnashram, which do not contradict bhakti, like there's no worship of devatas and pitras and all this, and no animal sacrifice and all that. And we can take those rules, and we can also do them in bhakti if they are favorable to bhakti. And we can do those. So we call those the gona vidhis. So for body, we have rules for body. We take the rules from Varnashram instead of taking rules from other cultures like Islam or whatever, or Christianity. We'll take the rules from Varnashram for cleanliness as much as we can. But of course, if we look in there, in the Varnashram system, we see the very complicated rules for cleanliness. Everything is defined. How you get out of bed is defined. What foot you put on the floor when you get out of bed is defined. Which way you face when you urinate is defined. How long your toothbrush should be is defined according to which Veda you come from. The Rig Veda should have a toothbrush. This twig, of course, this stick. And the Tarva Vedas will be this long, and the Sam Vedas will be this long, etc. So everything is very well defined. How many times you wash your hands, you know, this time, how many times you wash your mouth. Everything is very strictly defined, and obviously it's very difficult for us and almost impossible to follow those rules in the modern world. So to some extent we follow, but we're not going to follow that whole system. If we do, then we're called smartas. This is the smarta, trying to follow all the Varnashramic rules. So to some extent we follow, to the extent that it doesn't impede bhakti and is non-contradictory and it's not too much of a problem. We follow. Yeah? So for the body we follow rules. And we have rules for society, so we have things like samskaras for family life. So generally we follow those, and we cross out those portions of the samskaras which deal with devata worship, etc. So this is how we do samskaras. So that's for family life, from birth to death. There are different ceremonies, Vedic ceremonies one does. So we follow those, but we don't worship the devatas in doing those things. So for family life, there's there. And then, of course, there's rules for interaction of family members and between men and women and people in society and how you interact and whatever. And kings and respect for kings and leaders, etc. So social rules are there. And in general, we try to follow those things which are practical for us. So in this way, we can use some of the rules because we're living in a society and we have a material body. So therefore, we follow these rules as long as they're non-contradictory to bhakti. They're not absolute, but they help us. But on the other hand, the main factor are the primary rules, the mukhya vidhi, which are the 64 angas of bhakti. So those are the ones we must concentrate on. And everything else is secondary. That if the things aren't there, then we don't mind too much, and we still concentrate on the primary vidhis. So these actions are not like the actions mentioned in this verse, which are in sattva, raja, and tama. The activities of bhakti are nirguna. They're beyond the modes of nature. Completely beyond the modes of nature. And similarly, the knowledge of bhakti is beyond the modes of nature. Here we have sattvic knowledge of merging in Brahman. We have rajasic knowledge of our modes, mode of passion knowledge, in which we distinguish one item for the other. Mode of goodness, everything is one. Kaivalya. And so we see that, you know, in the mode of goodness, they see everything as one. Everything is one. We don't see difference or equal poise or calm. This is mode of goodness, the Gyani. And then mode of passion, we see difference. I am different from you. This is mine. This is yours. We get into this sort of duality vision. That's mode of passion. And then mode of ignorance, completely bewildered. Completely opposite view of everything. What is right is wrong, what is wrong is right, and everything, what is black is white, white is black, everything is upside, knowledge is completely topsy-turvy. So, these are the modes, knowledge and the modes of nature. So, knowledge in bhakti, that is knowledge of the Supreme Lord, knowledge of the process of bhakti. All of this, the sambandha gyan, and knowledge of the goal, sambandha, avidya, and prayojana, all of this is beyond the modes of nature, completely. So yes, we can go for knowledge, but we go for knowledge related to bhakti. That is transcendental knowledge, beyond the modes of nature. This knowledge of oneness actually is in the modes of nature. So we go for knowledge of the Supreme Lord and the process of bhakti. That knowledge is transcendental. So studying that knowledge and getting that knowledge is not binding in the world. It takes us beyond the material world. It takes us to the spiritual world. So therefore, this is the we have the actions here and the knowledge defined in terms of gunas and what is nirguna. We understand from this that ultimately bhakti is the independent process beyond the gunas, and all other processes are in the gunas and dependent upon bhakti to give their results.
When you worship Lord Rama, you get different qualities when you worship Lord Krishna. So what is the difference?
Well, ultimately, if you worship Rama, you go to Rama, yes? And then you become a devotee of Rama, and you worship him in Dasya Rasa with great reverence and you understand he's the Supreme Lord. If you go to Krishna, you don't do that. You worship him in an intimate manner, and you establish a relationship as a friend, or as a lover, or as a parent, or whatever like that, and you don't see him as God. So different.
In the earlier part of the lecture, he said that persons, you know, who are offering the incense to Krishna, the mode of goodness, go to Brahma Loka. But we also see that Krishna explains in chapter 2 in the Swarupam Abhisya Bhagavan's here. So how do we understand?
Oh, yeah. So that, Vishwanath takes that as meaning that part, the whole section about five verses is on bhakti. That only bhakti is eternal. And the other processes are temporary. So he takes that verse as meaning bhakti.
So that's not taken as...
not karma yoga.
Symptom of bhakti at all.
Huh? No, that verse is not taken as karma yoga, but as bhakti yoga. That doing a little of that is permanent. Even though it's in chapter 2, he says those verses must refer to bhakti, because the other processes don't do that. They're not permanent. Karmas get exhausted. The yogi.
Yeah. angry or something. So how you would comment that? Is this higher or not higher? But why they said this, that we should become like a mind
Well, that's the ideal of the Gyanis and the Yogis. The Yogi especially is trying to stop the functions of the mind. That is the purpose of yoga. Chitta Vritti Nirodha. That's the first sutra of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Stop the functioning of the mind completely. So the whole process, eventually you go through the whole thing of Yama, Niyama, and Asana, and Pranayama, and Dharana, and Pratyahara Dharana, and Jhana. And to get to samadhi. So when you get to samadhi, that is where the mind is completely stilled. It doesn't function anymore. So what functions? It's atma. Atma functions at that point. So you stop the mind. When you stop the function of the mind, then the atma naturally reveals itself. Otherwise, it's covered up and hidden. So the whole purpose of yoga is to do that, to get that mind in that very, very inactive position.
So they're talking about the mind.
Yeah. So, we see on the other hand that in bhakti, there's disturbance. The gopis get very disturbed when Krishna leaves. And they faint, and they cry, and they want to commit suicide even. All sorts of things they want to do. Or they get angry with Krishna, and they curse him, and do all sorts of things. And it is very intense. So we see that in bhakti and prema, prema is not a situation of peace. And the higher you go, the more disturbing it gets. So the higher, of course, Shantarasa is very peaceful, Dasyarasa is more or less peaceful, and then when we get to Sakya, it becomes a little more disturbed, and when we get to Vatsalya, Madhya Soda gets very disturbed, and she faints every time Krishna leaves, or some accident happens, and some demon attacks, then she starts trembling and crying, etc. And then when we get to the gopis, it's most intense. And we see when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and he goes to Mathura, and then Uddhava goes there, Nanda and Yasoda are no longer eating, they're no longer cooking, the kitchen is full of spider webs, and they're sitting there and they're all morose and they're almost dying, and everyone's lying on the bank of the Jamuna as if they're dead out of grief. So then we'll say, wow, how can a spiritual world be full of such negative sentiments? It's supposed to be full of Ananda. So it's explained that this actually is part of Ananda. It is spiritual, it's not material, the dualities of sukha and dukkha. It's not the material sukha and dukkha. This is only an aspect of the ananda of the spiritual world. So their love has this section where it looks as if it is like the material grief or whatever, but actually it is only in that position in order to increase the bliss. So it is part of the bliss of the spiritual world. It's spiritual, it's not material. And if one doesn't want that, then one goes for Shantarasa or something else instead.
Why is knowledge of Brahman?
Sattva. There's two aspects in the material world, vidya and avidya. And they're both part of material nature and such. So the vidya aspect manifests in sattva gun. And that vidya allows you to distinguish atma from body. So the Lord allows some sort of spiritual realization within the gunas itself. That is like a loophole within the gunas itself at which you can get out. So he puts something there so that you can, within the gunas, you can have a chance of, you know, getting out. But of course it's not complete, as I say, because then you have to go to bhakti to get the real liberation or whatever. You can get the knowledge, I'm not the body, I'm the atma, or I'm Brahman or whatever, non-material. But then to actually get out, then you also have to take assistance of bhakti, which is nirguna. And of course if you go to bhakti, then you can, direct bhakti, then you can go beyond liberation. So the Lord gives a chance to the people in the material world to go for liberation. So built into sattva-guna is this idea of knowledge of the absolute Brahman or whatever. Usually, but of course not always. As I, you know, if a person drinks alcohol every day of his life when he's 40, then obviously he's going to have a weak liver, and then he's going to get chronic liver disease, and that chronic terminal thing is going to cause a terminal illness ultimately, and he'll die because of that. So that's not karma. And that's just foolishness that he's done that. His motivation is to shorten his lifespan. Even Ajamila said why he was supposed to die. He was supposed to die at that time. Actually, he wasn't supposed to die at that time, but because of his sinful activities in the lifetime, he shortened his life. He shortened his lifespan due to his sinful activities in this lifetime, so therefore he died sooner than he should have, actually. Well, if we're trying to get something for our enjoyment, material enjoyment, then we're back in the modes. If we're doing it simply to come closer to Krishna and serve him better, then it's beyond the modes. So in other words, devotees also have desires. Nitya siddhas have desires also. Their desire is to please Krishna. So we don't give up desire. But the desire is concentrate. The object of desire is Krishna. Yeah, for ourselves, I want to enjoy as a result of this. What kind of knowledge you're talking about? That's bhakti. That knowledge is not like the jnana of the material world, the sattva-gun jnana. That is transcendental, so it's part of bhakti. So knowledge is necessary for devotional development. If we don't have that knowledge of sambandha, whatever, then our bhakti is called bhakti abhas. It is a reflection of bhakti only. So we do need that knowledge. Otherwise, our bhakti is not perfect. It's like mixed bhakti almost, because we have misconceptions about who is Krishna and what is bhakti, etc. So we do have to have that knowledge. Then we can do pure bhakti.
If mode of goodness is binding to the material nature, then why the mode of goodness also is said that it's very favorable for the
goodness? Because in the mode of goodness, one is not inclined to be attached to material things for that reason. Well, but less than the other. There is still attachment, but one has less desire to enjoy in the material world, much less than in Raja and Tamagun. So therefore, that aspect is favorable. So in Bhagavatam, it says the qualification for bhakti and shraddha is that one should be not too attached to the material world. Okay, Hare Krishna.